on Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, and progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to everyone out there who is angry and happy and, you know, just, you know, by and large, everybody. Mark Riley is going to be, from here on out, doing some field reporting, from the, for Air America. I can't even pull it off, you know. I couldn't even do it. Mark Riley's back from England.
Hey!
And he's back on the air.
Thank you very much.
John Sebastian for your
Yanks.
Wayne Gellman and was, you know, I...
You don't mind. The closest he got to England was Englishtown, New Jersey.
Nah, get out of here. Really? He said, I was in London, pal. I got proof.
He says he's got proof.
He's got proof. Unless his wife financed that vacation. By the way, did you get your daughter a Christmas present?
I got your daughter a Christmas present. What are you talking about?
Oh, no.
All right.
Proof.
Let me see.
A London travel pass.
He's got a tattoo pass.
I traveled with Riley. As I was saying before we went on the air.
Here's another one. See?
You've only done short trips.
I just did a day trip. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Usually the third day of a vacation with him, he loses his wallet. And you got to call. God forbid if you cross to another country. He'll leave you with immigration.
This guy was standing there next to the salesmen that are biting the gold chains to show everybody it's real gold.
Where's that, in Mexico?
It was in Tijuana.
Wayne had got
a couple of margaritas in him at one of those two-for-one bars.
You know,
it was all over.
Like a rock. And I'm surprised he hasn't hit you up for any money, or maybe it's an ethnic thing.
I only hit black stuff from him.
Got
any?
Okay.
Yeah, by the way, Gellman, you got a tenner I can borrow?
There you go. Yeah, but the thing is, you didn't see him going in his wallet, though, did
he? He went into his pocket for a second, and then he just stopped talking.
Yeah. That's what always happens. He goes, oh, I can't move.
So it's good to have you back, man.
Well,
good
thanks,
to see
man.
You.
What did I miss? What did
you miss? We had some people sitting there, you know, in your place. We had Mick Foley for a couple of days. That was, you know.
I read about that on one of the wrestling websites.
Oh, really?
They had a whole thing about Mick Foley and you, the whole, you know.
No kidding.
Mick Foley, Mark Maron, talking about wrestling, talking about, you know, Brent Bozell.
I learned a lot about wrestling. We took Brent Bozell down a notch. For the first day, Mark Danner was in. He was pretty good. He came. He showed up, like, you know, right at 6, so it was a little intense. But he got right into the groove. Anthony LaPay was in yesterday.
He was in yesterday. I heard him. He was good.
Yeah, he's pretty
Guerrilla
good.
News Network.
Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty good. But I'll tell you, the most fun we had was the day that Brendan and Dan. It was just me and Brendan and Dan and Kalo.
Uh-oh.
And Kent came in. And it was, and Larson was gone, too, which makes it better. So, so it's kind of a free for all.
Oh Lord, have mercy!
But that was a pretty fun day. But all in all, you were missed, and we're glad to have you back.
Well, I'm glad to be back. Believe it or not, because I'm still operating on British time. For me, it's like 11:10.
I know you're all jammed up. I've never seen your eyes this clear before, man.
I know. It's amazing.
So you were flying. Oh, let me just update you on what's going on. What's going on in my life? You know, I was in L.A.
Yeah,
that was great for a week. My wife was here for a week, and let me just be honest with you about something. The cats are coming around.
Really?
The cats are coming around, Riley. I don't even know what happened. I think it's because I started to, like, take the food up off the floor and feed them, like, at certain times during the day. But the ones that, you know, were really mean, the one that liked me, Monkey, he's, like, my best friend. And then the other one, the black and white one, is starting to come around. Unbelievable. What is it like? This is 6 months later, however long it's been?
Has it really been that long?
When was the Republican convention?
September. It's been, like, three, four months.
Oh, really? It feels like a year.
Oh, my God. It's an evolution. Remember I told you at the beginning, it's an evolutionary process. It takes time. Cats react. I mean, one of my wife's best friends has two cats.
Yeah.
So when we were in London, my daughter found this thing, you know, one of those things on a stick that jumps up and down.
That could be a lot of things.
Yeah, I know. No. The thing where, you know, it's got a little man on the end of a...
Dancing man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she started playing with them. Now, these are two pretty laid-back cats.
This is in England?
Yeah.
English cat. Yeah.
They were maniacs by the time she got finished. They're just, like, jumping this thing in front of
her.
Yeah,
I really...
fighting each other the whole night.
I'm getting pretty attached to the one. I got rid of one, but you knew that.
Yeah.
That one ended up in Brooklyn. Did you know that?
No.
I didn't know the Yemeni guy. I took it to Brooklyn. That's what he says. I'm starting to suspect. I don't even know what. But anyways, he says it's okay. It's with his brother. His brother was some sort of cat charmer. Like the cat was too angry for the Yemeni guy who owns the deli, Tony. Yeah. And he's like, that cat was crazy. You know, so my brother came over, just picked it up and took it away. And I'm like, whoa, you picked up that cat? And apparently that's what happened. So that cat is in Brooklyn having a good time living in a deli. So we got to hear about Britain. You didn't miss much here. I mean, I saw a lot of movies, you know, but you don't go to movies, so that doesn't make any sense.
No, I don't go to movies. I mean, I was surprised at how little news of what goes on here actually makes the British press.
Hey, it barely makes the news here.
you know, I think you're right. The Rumsfeld was very much in the news over there.
Uh-huh. For what? Which part?
The fake signature part.
Oh, really?
They climbed all over him like a cheap suit about it.
Yeah, that picked up a lot of momentum over there.
It picked up an extraordinary... I mean, you know, people in Britain said, well, why is he still... Secretary, and I felt myself saying, why is he so... But the Mosul lunchtime bombing was also a very, very big story.
In the mess hall tent?
The mess hall tent, a tragic event. But again, spotlighting the incompetence of our Secretary of Defense. The absolute incompetence of a guy who can, you know, can't figure out how to keep a terrorist out of an American installation.
That was pretty. That was a pretty profound screw up.
I mean,
really a disaster.
The guy had been apparently working there for 2 months.
It's just unbelievable. And at first, they were releasing stories that it came from above.
Yeah.
And then, you know, within a couple of days, they're like,
It was inside. And then, you know, Rumsfeld goes over to Iraq for Christmas. Another one of those quotes. I mean, the British press, it was amazing to me because even Sky News couldn't, you know, feign some... Yeah. Well, Donald Rumsfeld made a surprise visit.
Right,
to the
right.
US. You okay? You all right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was unbelievable because people thought that he was just trying to keep his behind out of the fire.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I pretty much agree with. I thought, that, and I understand you carried the banner on this, that Rumsfeld should have, you know, any honorable person would have quit.
Yeah, he should have quit.
He would have just resigned. Said, look, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing, and it's time to go.
Just pushed out. He should have just been pushed out.
Yeah.
Well, we want to hear some more details about what you did, where you went, and what England was like, and we're going to do all that. We're going to also give the people some information where they can get involved with some stuff. We want to get rid of we'd like to get some, you know, some nationwide opposition, Alberto Gonzalez, and we've got some information on our website where you can contact your senator and contribute to the purchase of a full-page ad in the New York Times. You can go to the links at morningsedition.com and maybe give some money to be part of that. Also, we want to get some support going for Congressman John Conyers' drive for fair election, so go to the links page on morningsedition.com for that because he's got to get some senators on board. Hopefully at least two will step up. Reid and Kerry should.
About Barack?
Yep.
How about Barack standing up? It'd be nice. He's new. He was sworn in yesterday. And, you know, I got to tell you this before we go to break. I saw Dick Cheney swearing these people in, and immediately I thought of you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought...
His eyes rolled back into his head.
No, I thought a lizard was going to crawl out of his mouth.
I am the Dark Master.
Yep. You know, there was just a shot of him turning somewhere, and I thought, there it goes. It's coming out of his mouth. Barron was right all along.
And we're going to talk about Tom DeLay, of course, the bug-killing midget king of the pig pack, after we come back. But mostly I want to hear about your trip to England. It's 15 past the hour. Air America Radio. Riley's back.
Yo.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Because two marks are better than one. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning, Yanks.
He's back. He's only been gone like 6 months. That was the longest vacation anyone has ever taken ever. How long was that? It felt like an eternity.
Well, it was a little while. Just over 2 weeks,
So you go to England. You made it through the flight, which was your biggest concern initially.
Absolutely.
How was the flight out? Nervous.
It was great. It was great. There was no turbulence whatsoever. It was late. No.
Where do you freak out the most? Right at takeoff?
No, before I actually get on the plane is when I really freak out the most. And that was when my doctor prescribed this thing, this little pill you take a half hour before you get on the plane.
What's it called?
Muscle relaxant.
What was it, a Xanax? You give you Xanax?
I don't know what. I never look at the labels. I just stop the pills.
Why? Because you don't want to get attached to the name?
Yeah. I don't want to remember what it is. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, I dropped one of those and got on the plane. It felt great. You know, actually got a little sleep.
Did you fly Virgin?
Yeah.
So you got the little toy pack and everything?
The toy pack for my daughter. No leg room whatsoever.
Really?
Unless you're on the bulkhead, man. Yeah. The Virgin doesn't believe in much leg room.
Otherwise,
great flight, though.
I thought you could have your own trailer in first class on Virgin, your own house.
I don't fly first class.
All right.
Oh, man. Now, don't let Gilman fool you over there.
No, you're actually honoring exactly what he said.
That's right. I flew economy. First class, they got beds, for God's sake. You know, it looks like everybody's got an individual cubicle.
You let your family fly economy. You're actually in flight attendant training just to get the free ride.
That's right.
All right, so you get to England. Where do you go first?
We went to have lunch with a very close friend, my wife's best friend, and her fiance, big fiance, at a place called Electric, which is part of this whole complex. It's a club, a private club, a movie theater, and a restaurant.
Wait, this is right in London?
This is in Portobello Road, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's like a private club, movie theater, and a place to eat all in one.
All in one. And then we went along Portobello Road, which has all of these open-air stalls and stuff, antiques, food, you name it.
Oh, yeah.
Got some fresh meat. See, now, this is where you helped me out, Marin, a lot.
Oh, yeah, how'd that
because
happen?
The first thing we did was really buy some fresh fruit at Portobello Road and took it back to the room, because we had like an apartment.
Oh, yeah,
you got two bedrooms, two baths, and a full kitchen with a refrigerator.
Nice.
So we came back, I had grapes, I had, they call these things satsumas. They're like real small tangerine-looking things.
Oh, yeah? Are they like kumquats?
No, so they look just like tangerines.
Okay.
They call them satsumas. They're wonderful. And they're a big thing at Christmas time.
Are they the same as clementines or smaller?
Smaller.
Okay.
Smaller than clementines.
We're doing some food talk. I like food.
Yeah,
but you save a lot of money when you do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, I did that. Then I went and changed my SIM card, so I saved money on my phone. I saved money on everything.
So Gelman was right.
At a 2-to-1 exchange rate, believe me, your dollar doesn't go very far.
The SIM card was smart. So you got to use your phone regularly. Were you able to make calls to the States with no problem?
No problem. I was down. My rate by the time, by New Year's Eve, was down to 10 cents a minute.
Yeah, it was nice to hear from you over vacation.
I didn't have your cell phone.
All right, I get it. Yeah, right.
Yeah. I didn't remember.
Nice reading to call the show over the vacation.
I thought about it, but then I said, nah.
That's kind of cheesy, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, it was a it was a really great experience.
Tell us about your grapes from London. It's better you come back and tell us about them when you're here.
Yeah, right. And then I actually went. You're going to hate this. I went to a church service.
Why am I going to hate that? It's so nice. Was it a big old church?
Yeah. St. Martin in the Fields.
How old is that one? They got some old.
Since the 16-something.
Right. They got some real. It's weird in Europe. The history is really history.
History, yeah.
You know, here, anything American, for the most part.
200 years.
A few hundred years, you know, maybe a little longer if you go back to the colonies, but, you know, outside of Indian stuff. But, you know, there, wow, man, it goes back. You know, there are rock walls from, like, you know, B.C. over there.
Before central heating, for God's sake. I mean, you know, and this is one of these places, you know, we come out of the train, and look, and there's a line.
So the church?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I said, wait, hold up. I'm waiting online to go to church.
I'm looking for a miracle. Can I get two for tonight, please? Anybody got two? I'm looking.
It was unbelievable. But, I mean, the place was packed to the rafters.
And then somebody comes up, here's two tickets. Yeah. I did get a miracle.
No, it was a really nice. I was glad I went. Inexplicably, I was glad. But there was something that happened while we were there. We were coming out of the train station, and there's a group of homeless guys that were congregated in one end of the train station.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're talking about blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, I hear one of them at the top of his lungs, F America!
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And then he saw my daughter, and he apologized. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean
to. Because she was a kid.
Exactly. He didn't know I was an American.
Right.
But it was just so spontaneous and you know, like, karmic that I'm walking by an American to hear this guy say. And there is this kind of undertone of resentment.
Did a couple people give him a couple pounds?
I wondered. All of a sudden, there were money showered from all over the place. But it was like there is this kind of befuddlement at where America's going.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know,
where America's dragging them into.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Blair is taking a lot of heat for being, in essence, Bush's lapdog.
Sure.
As far as, you know, Americans are concerned. The response to the tsunami was very different there, I think. Primarily because a lot of rich Britons go to those resorts. Well, one was in Thailand.
Right.
There was another one, I think, I don't know if it was in Indonesia, but or Sri Lanka, or the Maldives, I think. All
Maldives,
of these different, yeah. They have big resorts. They were like several thousand Britons
did
caught up in this.
Did he come right out right at the beginning? Because, you know, it took Bush, as you know, a few days to not only get the money up to not even where it needs to be, but to actually make a statement other than, you know, Clinton shouldn't talk before me. And then, you know, yesterday he brings out his old man and Clinton act as his heart, which he doesn't have. And, you know, he has no credibility as an empathetic person, so he's got to bring these two guys in. I'm pissed off because Clinton is involved with either of them. You know,
I heard you talking about that yesterday, and I think you got good reason to be mad.
Yeah, people are like, you know, he's just being generous. He's just acting out of his heart. It's like, you know, I can't see any of those guys as doing anything other than political actions. And I think that Clinton involving himself with those two scumbags is I just find it contemptible.
See, I don't understand, because when I first heard about the tsunami, which was the day after Christmas, what was called boxing, you know, what they call in England boxing, my first thing is, Bush has got to put up $1 billion immediately.
Yeah.
The first helicopters these people should see should be American helicopters.
Right.
Because that is leadership.
Yeah.
If you're going to sit up and talk about being a leader by invading another country that, by the way, really didn't do anything that you said they did to warrant the invasion, then you ought to show leadership by saying, okay, this is America's $1 billion on the table. You call Bandar. You call the Kuwaitis, our good friends.
Yeah.
You call all these other oil-rich countries.
$1 billion each.
Each.
At least.
Yeah. Match me.
Yeah.
Match me. And you go, and one of the things you make sure is that this early warning system, and this has been a big controversy there, I don't know about here, but there is in the Pacific an early warning system that lets people know about these tsunamis.
Well, Frank Pallone, the congressman from New Jersey, I saw him on Crossfire, and you know he was talking about America should pay for this global warning system for tsunamis, and Tucker Carlson was like, why should we pay? And Pallone was like, because it's only $30
million. Exactly.
And it could benefit the world.
It might have saved thousands of lives had anyone been able to call, because the people apparently in the Pacific knew this was coming.
Right.
And were not able to contact anybody in the region to let them know.
So I'm so glad you're back, Mark. We're going to come back and talk about tort reform. Bush is going to, where is it? It's in Madison County, Illinois, which lobbyists call the hellhole of tort reform. So we're going to get into that a little bit, a lot, for the next few days. We'll be back in a second, Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour, Mark Maron here, Morning Sedition. Mark Riley is back.
Hey!
He's right there. I see him. Ramon just came in with his twin brother. Who the hell knew that? Did you see that? I had to do one of those stupid silly, like, wait a minute. Nope, there's two of them. I had to clean my glasses. Wow. Well, maybe it's in relation to this, of course. Today we have George Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton's Palm Pilot, because they are traveling together. 6 a.m., wake up, Bush. Oatmeal, prayer, exercise. Clinton, oatmeal, read 8 newspapers, special full-body Asian massage from Peng Li. Special in quotation marks. Special. 8 a.m., appear together on the Today Show. Bush, note, have Clinton stay on message. Sit between him and Katie Couric. Clinton, note, make eye contact with Katie. Smile and say, tsunami. 10 a.m. press conference. Bush, tell Clinton to stop grinning all the time. He's not selling his damn book now. Clinton, tell Bush to smile once in a while. The guy looks like the Crypt Keeper. 12 noon. Working lunch to discuss fundraising campaign. Bush, tell Clinton this will be a lot like a military campaign. Oh, wait, he wouldn't know anything about that. Clinton, tell Bush this will be a lot like a president's second term. Oh, wait, he wouldn't know anything about that. 4 p.m., appear on Wolf Blitzer. Bush, ask that horny show-off hillbilly what the Thai word is for impeached. Clinton, tell Wolf that until today, I thought his son was the stupid one. 6 p.m., interview with Fox. Note, separate limos. 8 p.m. NPR interview. Canceled. 9 p.m. David Letterman appearance. Canceled. 10 p.m. Have lawyers draw up restraining orders. There is the mutual schedule of the two ex-presidents touring the country as Bush Jr.'s heart. Here we go.
Such as it is.
Let's get into this, man. So Bush is going to go try his new sales pitch on tort reform, i.e., or the proper way to phrase it, restricting victims' rights. That is what tort reform is. That is what we will be referring it to it as.
That's right.
Restricting victims' rights. Now, he's going to Madison County for a specific reason, right, Riley?
He's going to Madison County for a couple of very specific reasons. I am not going to use the term that the media is now using for Madison County, Illinois. I have never been there. I don't know the people of Madison County, Illinois. That's not the same Madison County that they use for the bridges of Madison County.
Probably.
I don't know.
No, it's not.
Shows you how ignorant I am about all of this.
I don't know. Somebody will email or blog. No, that was the Madison County.
Right. I do know this.
Yes.
Madison County has reserved the right to allow its citizens to recover damages when they have been injured.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's be real clear about that. This is not that blah, 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 blah that you're going to read about all day in the papers today in describing this place. This is not a place where people sue egregiously or that they receive humongous damage awards with regard to what they sued for in the first place. It's not about that. But, Mark, there's just an important issue here as well, and that is Bush is floating this structure up as a trial balloon, the structure of putting together a program and then saying to the American people, okay, these are the parameters as of the problem as I see it. And what he's doing is floating this as a trial balloon for Social Security later. Let me explain quickly what I mean. He has framed this thing, this Madison County, Illinois. What is it? It's a judicial hellhole.
That's a word that's a disturbing way to put it, because even in the Associated Press piece, a little county with a reputation for big lawsuits, some call it a quote-unquote judicial hellhole. But it's lobbyists. This is a frame put in place by lobbyists who are pro restricting victims' rights.
Right. And he's now putting it in the, okay, I'm going to this judicial hell to show people the need for what?
Yeah, for restricting victims' rights.
Yeah, exactly, for restricting victims' rights. He calls it something else. We won't call it that for the purposes of this discussion. What he's trying to do now is put in the minds of the American people, this is the problem. There are excessive lawsuits. How many? Doesn't matter.
The lawyers are the bad guys.
The lawyers are the bad guys. The HMOs, the pharmaceuticals, the doctors are the good guys.
Right. These lawyers are preying on the victims like pharmaceutical companies, insurance companies. These are, these poor entities.
Yes.
That have a hard time surviving on their own without protection.
Exactly. And he's framed this entire argument. He's going to put it in the form of legislation. He's going to try and get it passed. But the next step is going to be to frame in precisely the same manner the Social Security debate, the idea that there's a crisis, the idea that there's a problem, and only George W. Bush can fix the problem.
And also, it seems to me, Mark Riley, that what's happening is that in lieu of the fact that they can't figure out how to create a new manufacturing economy in this country, all they can do is start to chip away at individual freedoms and secured money that the people have, government-protected money and also people's ability to get justice from corporations to sort of refuel the economy with money that isn't there now, or they're saying isn't there now, to get new money in by screwing the people even more, as opposed to figuring out some sort of visionary way to reinvigorate the economy on a manufacturing level, because they don't seem to be capable of that.
Well, and it's also payback. It's also paying off the pharmaceutical and the insurance companies and the various organizations that contribute huge sums of money, not just to George W. Bush.
How come there's no cap on that? How much payback do these guys deserve or need? I mean, these guys have been, this administration and many Republican administrations and many presidents have been puppets of the pharmaceutical companies forever, and the insurance companies.
Absolutely. But they want to make sure that these guys can keep getting their triple-digit bonuses every year. They want to make sure they get their triple-digit raises and their stock options and all the rest of these things, which, by the way, George W. Bush is looking to tax less so they can keep more of it.
Right.
It's all part of a synergy that this administration and the conservative, right-wing, bedrock people that support it. And when I say support, I'm talking about the superstructure that Bush is still in the process of putting together. The courts, the legislators, the lobbyists, all these people working in concert toward a very specific end. And that end, as you pointed out, Mark Maron, is a very different America than what we have been used to.
Well, they use this language where it's sort of like we're being pro-business, that we're protecting the businessman, we're protecting individual businesses from these.
Hurt?
No, they're not only are they not hurt, what they aren't saying is that they are protecting corporations from the ability to be punished.
Yes.
Is that they're protecting corporations? You start putting these caps on lawsuits, not just with doctors, because this is just sort of a tease.
Yes.
To what they're going to do for corporations, that if you can't sue a corporation for $50 million. It's not about an individual being overcompensated or an individual looking for free money or an individual or lawyers looking for a big payday, but a big lawsuit, you have to remember, and a lot of people, I think, don't see this because people get jealous, especially people who are, who don't know a lot of things. They see someone, get $50 million from a tobacco lawsuit, and on some level they think, well, they just got away with, look what they just made for suing. They just made $50 million. I want $50 million. But it isn't about that individual getting too much money or getting more than they might think, that some might think they deserve. It's about hurting the corporation.
Yeah.
It's making that corporation feel the punch, so they will either change your policy or go the hell out of business.
Well, that's what you have to do when it comes to these big corporations. You've got to cost them money. But Bush understands very clearly, as you just pointed out, the idea of getting something for nothing.
Right.
See, because what happens in a lot of cases, people look at these big settlements and they think, well, whatever happened, it couldn't have been that bad.
Right.
Because of the way it's framed. And one of the problems that Bush has, and I wondered when this was going to come up, and I just saw it today, and finally it clicked. He does have some opposition among his own party.
Thank God. That's our only hope in a way.
And you know who's one of the people who is really savaging his changes to people's ability to recover damages here?
Who?
Lindsey Graham.
Okay.
Remember we talked about Lindsey Graham before?
Yeah.
Lindsey Graham is a trial lawyer.
Right.
Remember when they were all over John Edwards like a cheap suit for being a trial lawyer? Well,
right.
Lindsey Graham is himself a trial lawyer, and he's quoted as saying that this legislation Bush wants to pass is the worst legislation he's ever seen on the issue.
Well, it's weird that they've made trial lawyers this demonizing phrase, where actually, lawyers, not unlike, doctors whose heart is in the right place, help protect people.
Yes.
I mean, they help, they help represent people and heal people. There are bad apples in any profession, but as we'll find out when we come back, the good far outweighs the bad, and the numbers are skewed to benefit the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies, and the big corporations, and that's who Bush is fighting for. He's an anti, human president. This is not a guy that feels the pain of the working class, though for some reason the working class, thinks he's just genius, and they're being completely misled. And we'll get into this, the details of why he's wrong and why restricting victims' rights outside of just saying that is completely inappropriate for this country. It's 44 past the hour. We'll be back in a second at Air America Radio.
Check out all our favorite links, our latest blog entries, and our new line of merchandise at morningsedition.com.
Forty-nine past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, back from his six-month sojourn in England.
Oh, yeah.
Felt like a long time. I was nervous at first, but it got better.
Yeah.
Yeah. But never once did I say, hey, Mark Riley who? Never once did I say that. So look, first off, let me just get a couple of things out there before we get back into restricting victims' rights, or as they like to call it, tort reform. Oppose Alberto Gonzalez. Contact your senator and contribute to the purchase of a full-page ad in the New York Times. Go to the links page on morningsedition.com for more info. Let's get a little, there's a good chance that our Democratic senators might not step up.
Yeah.
And our Congress representatives might not step up because they're wussies. So maybe if the people step up and say something, maybe the message will get out there.
Yeah.
Also, support Congressman John Conyers' drive for fair elections. Go to the links page on morningsedition.com to see if he can get a couple of senators, either Democrat or I doubt a Republican is going to step up. But
you know, maybe
John Kerry, maybe Senator Reid from Nevada, right?
Maybe Barack Obama from Illinois.
If he's not too nervous about his political future, maybe he will step up. Do you think he will?
Let's hope.
Okay, so there you go. There's a couple of things you can do. If you want to help the victims of a tsunami in Asia, go to the links page on morningsedition.com to see what you can do. And now let's get back to...
What do you got? Now, I know that you just ran by some really heavy stuff, but you missed something.
Okay.
At the very end.
Okay.
What is that?
Oh, I will be performing at Jimmy Tingle's Off-Broadway Theater in Davis Square, Somerville, Massachusetts.
The return of Mark
Maron. Yes, on Friday and Saturday, January 21st and 22nd. I will be doing an hour and a 15 or hour and a half performance. There's an outside chance on one of those nights I will be revisiting my off-Broadway show, Jerusalem Syndrome, which I'm getting up and running again for a performance in Poway, California next month.
Look out.
I'll tell you, man.
Wait a minute. Where was that?
Poway.
And that's in February.
That's in February.
Black Poway. History Month.
POW. That's why I'm doing it. I'm doing Jerusalem Syndrome in just outside of San Diego in honor of Black History Month.
Stop Tijuana.
I think there are three black people in Poway who I've invited to come as my guests.
I'm sure they'll be there.
I have no idea what Poway's like. It's wrong of me to say that. But it's going to be interesting. It's at the Poway Center of Performing Arts. That's February 12th. Now, moving into this, let's get back to this.
Yeah.
Get away from me and my performing life.
Hey, man, you got to let people know.
I will. I'll start letting people know. I don't know. Sometimes, my insecurity manifests itself by saying, I'll be there. If you want to come on by. I'll be talking to some people. But I can guarantee you a good show. You never leave a Mark Maron show saying, wow, man, that was boring. It's either going to be that was hilarious or that was interesting. I hope that guy gets help.
Oh, Lord.
Or here's one, draining in a fun way. I'm exhausted. That's what some people say. Yeah, exactly. Draining. Newsweek. All right. Mark Maron's performance was disturbing in a way that makes me think he should be doing something else. The Los Angeles Times. A must-see if you are sad. Five stars, Psychology Today. If you see any show this year, let it be Mark Maron's, and just thank God that you don't have his head. Here we go. Now, Bush's plan, all right, protects pharmaceutical companies, all right, that make bad medications, not people. This is just a number of lists. This is a list of two or three, of the primary evil entities that Bush's plan protects. The medical malpractice bill backed by President Bush would prevent consumers from seeking punitive damages from the makers of Vioxx and Celebrex, two popular pain medications recently linked to increased risks of heart attacks and strokes. According to legal experts on both sides of the issue, one FDA doctor says as many as 139,000 people have had heart attacks that could be linked to Vioxx, with 30 to 40% of them fatal. Bush's bill would protect pharmaceutical companies from punitive damages as long as they met Food and Drug Administration standards to win approval of their drug, which is a rigged game because the FDA is slowly becoming just a pawn of the pharmaceutical industry.
They're watering the standards.
Yes. Merck and Pfizer, the makers of Vioxx and Celebrex, received FDA approval for their drugs, and both say they followed FDA requirements. If Bush's plan passes, victims' rights to sue companies like Merck and Pfizer would be taken away. All right, these companies are evil. Not only do they overprice medication, but most new medications that have come out of the pharmaceutical industry to treat ailments that have been successfully treated by pre-existing medications, most of the research money that they say is going into new cures and new drugs is going into just slightly tweaking old drugs to stop patents from being released so that generic forms of the drug can be afforded by many people.
Yeah, and the really hypocritical part of all this,
man. Yeah.
Is that he's created through framing. I got to give this to your man, Professor George Lakoff. He has created through framing the appearance of some sort of crisis here. Mm-hmm. Yet, according to the Congressional Budget Office, a nonpartisan entity, costs from malpractice lawsuits represent less than 2% of the nation's total health care spending. And in fact, the CBO goes further and says that the legislation pushed by Bush would reduce health insurance premiums by less than one half of 1%. And so what is everybody yelling about?
Exactly. There is no crisis. It's just like him being a pitch man for the corporations that his administration protects. And Bush also claims that the lawsuits cause the doctors to practice medicine in an expensive way in order to protect themselves in the courthouse. A study by the Harvard University School of Public Health, quote, did not find a strong relationship between the threat of litigation and medical costs. A study in the Journal of Health Economics, Health Economics compared medical costs in states with limits on lawsuits to states without limits and found only tiny savings, less than 0.3%. CBO reported no statistically significant difference in per capita health care spending between states with and without limits on malpractice torts. The truth of the matter is that insurance companies, when it comes to doctors' malpractice insurance, the idea that the malpractice insurance is relative to the number of lawsuits brought against the doctors is hokum. What it is insurance companies making a profit the way they make profits. They jack up the prices, you know, depending on the stock market, depending on the insurance company's investments, depending on, you know, what the insurance company wants to do.
They all, a lot, not all, I shouldn't say all, many of the people who are pushing Bush's agenda on this have themselves, sometimes more than once, sued in the past to recover punitive damages.
Love it.
One of them? The brilliant Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania, who sued in December 1999, actually supported his wife's medical malpractice lawsuit against her chiropractor for $500,000. The senator testified his wife should be compensated for the, God forbid, pain and suffering caused by a botched spine adjustment, saying she had to, quote, treat her back gingerly and couldn't accompany him on the campaign trail.
They're going to sue a chiropractor.
Yes.
Yeah. Here we go.
Deep.
Here's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. One, while Jeb is in Asia, ransack his office for missing Gore votes. Two, praise USC for beating Oklahoma in last night's national championship game. That'll teach them to vote for Bush. Three, watch debut of Alias for one, the latest advances in counterterrorism tactics, and two, fashion tips for spring. Three, watch... No, that was three. Four, since we've got Bush Sr. and Clinton working on tsunami relief, why not add Ross Perot? Five, today's phrase just dropped in the conversation. Here's the phrase of the day. Quote, $350 million for tsunami aid. Please, that won't even pay for one-time traveling robot soldier of the future. Who's going to protect you from the alien invasion in 2011? Wake up, people. This is a big deal. So what do we got coming up, Riley?
In the next hour, if you don't know yet why you should oppose Alberto Gonzalez, by the time we're done with you, you'll know.
That's for sure.
When we come back here on Air America Radio.
Maron, you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning's Edition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. A special hello to Tom DeLay, the bug-killing dwarf king of the legislative pig pack. You're going down this year. That's what I want. That's what I would love. Mark Riley is still in England, where he's going to be... reporting from England and many of the other states, not just, oh, there you gave it away, damn it. He's here.
England and some of the other states.
You know, England's sort of a state, isn't it, the state? No, it's not. What's up? So, Riley, we didn't finish talking about your big trip to England, like 9 weeks that you were gone?
Yeah, it was nine weeks, going on 10, actually.
You talked about reading newspapers there and getting some fruit. But
well,
did you do anything else?
Yeah, I did a bunch of stuff. I mean, I did a lot of reading of newspapers because I wanted to get a sense. You know, British media is different than America's media. And I wanted to get a sense of
how... Don't they read on the left?
No, that's drive on the left.
Sorry.
And they operate trains on the left, and they a lot of leftist stuff going on over there. But I really had the opportunity, you know, to see a pretty broad cross section, not just of London, but I had a chance to go into what's called the Fen Country.
What is that? Where is that?
That's the area about 2 hours north of London.
I am not an Anglophile American person. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Some people just love everything quaint. They love everything English. They love everything about, you know, the sort of English culture. I was there for 2 weeks after high school. I went there. I was in England for 2 weeks. I had a pretty good time, but I'm not one of these people that knows a lot about England. I enjoy tea and different kinds of teas.
Well, you know what? There's certain things that the British do much better than Americans. There's certain things Americans do much better than the British.
Okay.
For example, Americans do grocery stores and supermarkets better than the British.
I think we do it just about better than anybody.
Well, yeah.
Now, listen to me, all of a sudden taking all kinds of weird pride. Have you ever been to one of them big, obnoxious grocery stores?
Where you can buy a tractor trailer.
Where all the food is wasted because it doesn't sell. What happens to all that food? Anyways, go ahead.
Well, and then like, conversely, the Brits do like butter and bread and stuff like that better than Americans.
That's because they have local farms. It's a more intimate country. They have local economies. I imagine, like I noticed that when I was in France recently, is that when the stuff is made, you know, in small quantities by local farms, it's going to be better.
It is better, and there are other things that they do. They're a little bit more courteous on a regular basis than I find Americans to be. Well, of course, we're in New York, where courtesy is a four-letter word. But in England, you know, people are, oh, sorry if they step on your foot. You know, I mean, they really do kind of observe a certain surface civility.
I find that kind of, I find that disturbing.
What?
You know, I'd rather...
I know, yeah. What? You stepped on my foot, man. Well, excuse me?
I say sorry a lot, but there's something I find sometimes that the British culture is a little disingenuous. It's a little repressive. And one of the reasons is because they don't tolerate people like me that well. They don't entertain self-indulgence and neurosis like we do in this country, or like we used to. You know what I mean? I mean, there was a time where the neurotic Jew was the king of this country intellectually and culturally, and that's all gone. Thanks to Reagan. Reagan pushed out the neurotic Jew pop culture element of America.
How did he do that?
I'm not sure, but once he came, there was a whole new wave of intolerance towards, you know, needy, neurotic Jewish men. But anyways, but I found, even in a conversation I had recently with some British friends of ours out in Los Angeles, they came over for lunch, is that they just see it as sort of like navel-gazing. They just don't entertain that kind of like, you know, self-criticism, awareness, you know, hyper-insecurity. They're just like, hey, buck up. You know, stiff upper lip.
But see, now the downside of British culture is that they televise darts championships. Darts, okay? People throwing at a target with a little pointy thing.
Have you watched ESPN 2?
I've seen the World Darts Championship only in Britain.
Oh, yeah?
But a big guy with a mullet haircut.
Yeah, throwing darts?
I'm saying, wait, hold up. Don't you all, maybe you can cover a little American college football, which gets no play.
No, you go right from darts to curling.
Yeah,
you
know, curling, you know what I mean? Rugby.
Back-to-back excitement on British television.
That's right. And, you know, rugby, none of the players have teeth. It's worse than hockey.
Yeah.
Darts,
and curling. That's an afternoon. Stay tuned.
Coming up on Sky Sports, because Murdoch controls the entire sports television industry.
So let me ask you a question. You're a broomsman on the curling ice. That must be pretty exciting. So you're out there, you see the giant puck, you know, coming down, and you're the man with the broom. You're the broom. You're sweeping. You're thinking,
honey, I didn't script this.
If I don't screw up and that puck goes off of the thing, because this is relying on me. I'm the broomsman at the curling. What are those guys?
I don't know. There's a lot of sports over there. I mean, they're soccer mad in England. And also cricket, man. Cricket is a deep thing. But there's a communal nature to sports watching. Because everybody, you know, if you don't subscribe...
That's a nice word for mob mentality.
They all go to pubs. They get liquored up like crazy. And watch these sporting events and argue with each other.
Huh.
Yeah, it was kind of a big surprise to me. But you know what? That's
like, isn't that a country where they have to close the bars for 3 hours a day just so people don't, you know, then don't. They have a built-in sort of excuse to not then realize that you're an alcoholic.
Well, the pubs close at 11. And you know
but
what?
But they reopen, right?
Not, well, they reopen the next morning. But one of the things that the early closings.
Oh, that's right. You got to go to a bar.
Yeah. The early closings have a very interesting effect in that. A lot of British people attribute that to the sort of binge drinking that gives British pubs a bad rep because everybody's rushing to drink up before they leave. So they tend to overdrink during those hours that the pubs are open. So they tend to go out in the street completely sloshed in a couple of cases.
They have to get a few. You mean if they close at 11 at night?
Yeah.
But don't they close during the day for a few hours? I thought there was sort of like a nap time or a reprieve.
See, now, I'll give you an example. My wife's cousin and I went to see a soccer match at a pub. This is out in the fan.
You didn't actually get to go to...
No, I didn't get to go to a match. They were all sold out.
Oh, sorry.
But we went to see this match, right? This is like at 6 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
We go into this bar. There's nobody else there.
Yeah.
You know, so a pub, I'm sorry, not a bar. I ordered Coke, and he had some kind of... 15 minutes later, wave after wave of young British kids go into this bar. They walk into the bar completely tanked.
Yeah.
I mean completely tanked.
The pints?
Yeah, oh man, just drunk as skunks before they walk in the bar.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we're sitting there, you know, mind our own business, looking at TV. This one girl walks up, "Hey, mate! Happy New Year! How you doing?" Blah, 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 blah. Uh-huh. Next thing you know, her boyfriend wants to get us a drink from behind the bar. He's standing behind the bar. "Come on, buy a drink, mate."
Just taking over the place?
Yeah.
So you're telling me that on any given day when there's a soccer game, all pubs are fearing that their places are going to be taken over by a drunken mob of kids.
A drunken mob of kids. And me and my wife's cousin, who's about my age, we look at each other, "We got to get out of here. We got to get..." We can't.
This could very easily turn into a not good time.
Yeah, because, I mean, they were getting ready to... they were just tanked.
All right, so we're going to actually talk about some of the things, again, that you did in England. Because now we've only got two on the list. You went to which country? What country?
The Fen country.
Yeah. I'd like to know a little more about that. And we went to one pub where there was a problem. So there's still a lot to talk about.
Yeah, but no fist fights or anything.
No, I understand. But, you know, we're gonna save that for the top of the next hour. We're going to save the other stuff, and we're actually going to find out, did you do anything cultural? Did you go to a museum?
Went to several museums with my daughter.
There you go. So there, look at that. There's a whole human interest story to look forward to in the next hour.
But the drunkenness was the thing that stuck.
Did you have to explain it to your kid? No, that man's not retarded.
No. We didn't bring her to the pub, fortunately.
Okay. Well, that was a good call. You just left her in a room with the grapes?
No. She had four cousins and, plenty family there to supervise.
Oh, that's great. All right, so let's come back. We're going to talk about the neocon death cult's potential consigliere, Alberto Gonzalez. After this, we got the Dream Diary coming up. It's 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. It's not Marxism. It's Marxism. Mark Maron and Mark Riley every morning on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, who is back from England.
Hey!
You're listening to Morning Sedition. This is Air America Radio. Thank you for listening. If you want to go to our website, it's morningsedition.com. If you want to email us, it's sedition@airamericaradio.com. If you want to blog, I'm starting to invite people back there again. Come on by.
Why?
No, morningsedition.com. You can go and blog away. I haven't even looked at the thing in weeks. So here we go. I am, but I will start looking at it again. Okay. Yay. All right. I haven't even been to therapy in 3 weeks because of the vacations and this and that. What day is today? Wednesday?
Yeah.
I'm going tomorrow, but here's my Dream Diary, which are stacking up. This is last night's. I'm at the Orange Bowl. The bands are playing. The fans are screaming. The score is tied. A voice says, "Maron, you're in." I look down. I'm wearing a uniform. Oh, geez, where the hell did they get these shiny pants? Suddenly, this guy with no neck and veins popping out of his forehead gets right up in my face and screams, "Maron, you got to kick the field goal to win the national championship. Everything is at stake. Don't screw up." And then he smacks me on the ass, and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, Lombardi. I got into comedy to get away from guys like you, all right? And don't touch my ass. How would that be? We okay with that? All right. The coach says, move it, Maron. Move. I say, hey, buddy, I've never been into football, all right? What if I just answer some questions about movies? Anything? Can I do it? Move! So I trot out onto the field, and I catch a glimpse of myself on the Jumbotron. God, I hate these pants. The guys on defense are all about 300 pounds and throbbing with steroid rage, and they're barking, trying to break my concentration. The guy in the middle, the guy in the huddle are all staring at me, pleading, saying, you screw this up, and we'll have to live with this for the rest of our lives. The rest of our lives, Maron! Both fans are playing as loud as they can, and fans are screaming. The defense is barking as I line up the kick. I take a deep breath. The center snaps the ball. Suddenly, everything went quiet as a hawk swooped down, picked up the ball in his beak, and flew off with it. Everyone just stared for a second. Then I said, you see? Isn't this better than wasting all that emotional energy on sports? Everybody wins now. See? All right, long story short, five fans were arrested for assaulting a kicker, and the doctor says I'll be able to walk again in 6 months. But my football career may be over. My bed was filled. I woke up, my bed was filled with hibachis. With tailgating action in bed. Right on.
Whoa.
How do you like that? So look.
You know sports metaphor?
Sure. It happens occasionally. Okay. In my unconscious, I know it. There might be a sports fan in me somewhere. I've not quite been able to identify him. I'm like, that was a good hit guy.
Think darts.
Yeah. Darts. Darts. Curling. And we'll top it off with some rugby and later tonight a soccer match. So we're starting off slow and we're moving into the evening. I'm the broom man. All right. Oppose Alberto Gonzalez. He is up, of course, for confirmation as a neocon death cult's new consigliere. Contact your senator and contribute to the purchase of a full-page ad in the New York Times. You can find out how to do both those things if you go to the links page on morningsedition.com for more info. Also, if you'd like to support, and we urge you to support Congressman John Conyers' drive for fair elections by primarily, pushing senators again to get on board with this.
Stand up.
Yeah, stand up, John Kerry. Stand up, you big loser. All right?
See, there you go.
Harry Reid, come on, buddy.
Come on.
I think he might do
Ted
it.
Ted Kennedy?
Well, the problem is it's not unlike when they were trying to get someone to stand up for Florida. All needed was one senator.
One.
And no one, and Gore was sitting there overseeing the thing as vice president. He was in the chamber and just watching.
It was embarrassing. Black caucus member after black caucus member got up and started to read the order and, read a resolution to try and get something done about what happened in the 2000 election. And Gore kept interrupting and saying, well, do you have the support of a senator? And none of them did.
So they need a senator to sponsor them? Or how does that work? I mean, what does it, maybe, obviously, I'm not naive, but uninformed on some level. The senator steps up, and then where does it go after that?
Well, no, remember, see, what was happening was there were Congress people were stepping up.
Okay.
And they needed, because they were addressing the Senate, they were trying to get some kind of a resolution out of the Senate.
Okay.
And they needed someone from the Senate to, I guess, validate their legitimacy or whatever. In other words,
we'll get specifics from Bob Cusack.
Yeah.
Right? He's the managing editor of The Hill. He's going to be on, just
he
after the half hour.
Yeah,
he knows the nuances of the legislative chambers. So, but let's get into Alberto Gonzalez a little bit. First of all, he was, Texas chief legal counsel. He's been with Bush for a long time. He's one of these weird kind of, spineless but not unintelligent people that gravitate towards Bush because he has a charisma that makes him feel like men. He gave negligent counsel on death penalty memos to then-Governor George W. Bush. Gonzalez was responsible for writing a memo on the facts of each death penalty case when Bush was governor. Now, George Bush always killed whoever was on the table to be killed. The
yes.
guy killed no matter what. He was, an out-and-out murderer for the state in every case. Did not weigh anything. Even when there were pleas from the Pope for Carla Faye Tucker. Was that her name, Carla Faye Tucker?
Carla Faye Tucker, yes.
To let her go, that she had been, she was born again. She was doing good work in prison. She was reaching out, trying to save souls. Killed her. All right, Bush decided whether a defendant should live or die based on the memos that Gonzalez gave him. An examination of the Gonzalez memos by Atlantic Atlantic Monthly concluded that Gonzalez, quote, Gonzalez repeatedly failed to appraise the governor of crucial issues in the cases at hand, end quote. His memos caused Bush frequently to approve executions based on, quote, only the most cursory briefings on the issues in dispute. So that means he basically said, this guy did this, so he deserves to die. Did not involve any of the sort of, like, questions that were revolving around whether or not the guilt was, was it definitive that this guy should die?
Three words. No deep thought. There wasn't any. Well, he didn't have any. Bush didn't have any.
Well, he didn't want to even provoke, the man-child, faux president to, to actually have to think about anything. Just push the button. Just approve these state-sanctioned murders. Just do it.
Yeah, I mean, he's almost like Radar with Colonel Blake on MASH. It's an amazing phenomenon. And see, one of the things that Gonzalez does for Bush is to make him seem like he's an inclusive guy. This has been my guy. I've known him for all these years. I love his rags to riches story, poor Latino background, pulled himself up by his bootstraps. He embodies everything that Bush, thinks he embodies.
Yeah.
I'm going to need a glass of water.
Okay. So, yeah. There's a symbiotic relationship that he has with certain people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And Gonzalez is one of them.
Yeah.
And what you end up having happen is Gonzalez, time and again, reinforcing his sense of what Bush wants, something that Condoleezza Rice does very well.
Yeah, because he doesn't, he doesn't have much of a personality on his own or any sort of thought capacity. So he surrounds these people. He surrounds his narcissism with people that, agree with him, yet can also, think, or at least are, been given diplomas that say that he can think. So we're going to be back here in just a second with the War on Brains and also Bob Cusack, the managing editor of The Hill, to reflect on the first day of the 109th Congress.
Yes.
After this and much more on Air America Radio. Hey, I was singing. 34 past the hour, Mark Maron here on Morning's Edition with Mark Riley there. Say something.
Hi.
You all right? I thought I was going to lose you.
I'm looking at David Byrne here.
Sorry, I didn't mean to bother you. Go ahead and listen. Okay, that's enough.
I love life during wartime.
Yeah, it's a great. You can't separate it from my head from the big suit. Because I saw that movie when I was under the influence of
Stop Making Sense.
Hallucinogenic substances. And I used to love him. I loved even some of the solo stuff. I loved the Twyla Tharp, the Catherine Wheel soundtrack.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's genius. And the knee plays. That's genius.
I love the movie that the other movie that they did. What was it?
True Stories. Right, the Naked's a record.
Yeah.
Every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the four-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Thank you. Whatever your name is, Dateline. Topeka, Kansas, land of my ancestors, brave pioneers who cut the sod, tilled the soil, and inspired the gayest musical fantasy ever filmed with midgets. Never-ending battle against enlightenment continues to rage, comrades. Our walking brain stem of a president, mindlessly reacting to stimuli like a medicated five-year-old in a moon bounce, persistently clings to stupidity's apron strings with a determination more primal than Liza Minnelli sucking a spilled Jack and Coke out of her mattress. How's that for a buttload of similes, you bunch of broken-down Democrats? It seems George W. Bush's great lumbering war machine of dunsicaneous stupiditude, look it up, finally took a severe blow to the solar plexus this week when Kansas, the state, not that crappy 70s rock fusion band with the sappy acoustic ballads, lost yet another bid to make kids more ignorant than they are now. Over the cries of snatching bald-headed boys and "you ain't can't do that" of the state legislature, the state Supreme Court has unanimously ruled Kansas must spend more money on its public schools. That a state would financially rob its schools to the point where it violates its own constitution, shameful. That its own Supreme Court would have to force them to educate their own kids, ignominious. That I would use the words shameful and ignominious in every one of these spots for the last 6 months, tedious. Yes, Kansas, George W. Bush state, a state that conjures up images of a young Judy Garland, the Tin Man, and that cowardly lion. Our leaders, Xanadu. But to many, Kansas is more than just a reference point for disturbing homoerotic metaphors. It's also the Sunflower State, nicknamed after a monstrous flower that looks like a giant pockmarked head. Kansas was first discovered by Spanish explorer Francisco Coronado in 1540. Today, Kansas has even fewer people of Hispanic descent than it did back then. That's changed. In the 1880s, Kansas wheat farmers helped the territory become known as the nation's breadbasket due to their soil's fecundity, a term deemed offensive by most Kansans until someone from Ohio told them what it meant. Today, Kansas, again the state, not that crappy band with the high-pitched vocals and that irritating violin player, is a land of huge corporate farms, struggling to eke a living off the harsh land with only a pocket full of million-dollar subsidies and a little thing called gumption. But mostly, it's a land that inspired Dick Hickok and Perry Smith to kill the Clutter family. Yeah. So the next time you find yourself complaining about the deplorable educational system in Kansas, remember these two things. One, at least you're not in Texas. And B, I once saw a sunflower eat a small child. And that's today's dispatch from
the War on Brains.
Oh, man. Well, thank you, Mort.
Wow.
Thank you very much. And all I can say is carry on, my wayward son.
All right, thanks a lot, Mr. Marin.
Wow, remembered your name.
That's very nice of you. So what do you got going today? You going to get that thing on your head fixed? Or?
You mean my goiter? Why do you always make fun of my goiter?
I'm not making fun of it. It's just enough already. Why don't you just go to the doctor and get it dealt with like a regular person?
Well, I'm already working on this unsightly hump on the back of my head.
See, now the fan letters are going to come pouring in. Wow, a hump and a goiter. That Mort Milfington's for me.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the other letters will come in telling you to stop abusing me.
Oh, what are you, all sensitive now? Like you're a real person?
I have feelings.
Whatever.
You... I don't know. I just want to give you a hug and a verbal gift.
Oh, come here. Come on over here. Come here.
Get away from me.
Come on.
You creep me out.
Oh, come on. I love you, Mort.
And me and Mark Reilly are hanging out without your knowledge. You know that, right?
Yeah, I do know that. All right.
He went to England with me.
All right. You did?
Yeah. And London really does swing like a pendulum. You know what I mean?
I hear
you,
hey,
Mark. Yeah. All righty.
All right. Well, why don't you just get at it?
All right. Whatever.
So long, mate.
Oh, all right. Everyone's friends but me. That's the deal. I get what's going on. Well, me and Kayla are going to... We hang out here all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we hang out. We have...
We're going for buffalo wings now.
We have slumber...
Kayla.
Whatever.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I thought we were friends, but we're not friends. And, I'm making fun of his condition. Look, let's get to the real stuff. The 109th Congress kicked off yesterday with a Republican in the White House and a Republican Congress. What can we expect for the next 4 years? Nothing but pain. Joining us on the phone from Fairfax, Virginia, is Bob Cusack. Bob is the managing editor for The Hill. Thanks for being here. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Hi, Bob.
It's a pleasure to talk to you because I don't understand anything. So how was the first day of the 109th Congress? I mean, were there any surprises? Did Tom DeLay fly? Did his eyes roll back in his head and blood shoot out of his ears?
There were a lot of formalities and swearing in. There was a bit of news, though, because Tom DeLay did want to change the rules so that if he's indicted, he won't have to step down. But a lot of Republicans balked at that, and they kind of reversed course and decided that actually if he is indicted, like some of his aides have been, he will have to step down as majority leader. So that was the big news of the week.
So that's good news from where we're sitting.
Yeah.
What does it mean that are we supposed to think that all of a sudden some of these guys have integrity? What was this balking? Is it, can it be seen as political or is it, you know, genuine sort of like concern for the integrity of the House?
Well, I think, I mean, a lot of Republicans, when they came in and they took control of Capitol Hill 10 years ago, they passed this rule. So a lot of Republicans were saying to Tom DeLay and the other leadership saying, hey, we're acting like hypocrites. We passed this rule 10 years ago, and now we're reneging it. So let's keep the rule in place. And so it was certainly some friction within the Republican Party that led to them backing off.
Wow, so some of them are actually concerned with looking bad.
yeah, a little bit. Some of them are, yeah.
Bob, who are the Democrats? We know who the Republican players are in the 109th Congress. Who are the Democratic players? I mean, people know a little bit about Harry Reid from Nevada, I guess Nancy Pelosi in the House, but, I mean, who are going to be the players in this, or do the Democrats have any players?
They're pretty, I think they're faceless right now. I mean, certainly Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi are people that are leaders of their parties, but they're both in the minority. I don't think a lot of people would recognize Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi going down the street, so... I think a lot of people are going to be looking to Hillary Clinton. I think people will be closely monitoring what Barack Obama does. But right now, it's really unclear who is the face of the Democratic Party.
Well, that's disturbing. So let's talk about this a little more. We're going to take a break here. And Bob, when we come back, let's address some of the stuff these guys want to push through. And, you know, if and there's going to be any resistance at all or what. Can you do that for us?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll be back in a second with Bob Cusack, a managing editor from The Hill, and with much more, of course, and that'll all happen in this. Just get on with it. It's Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, on the air and online at morningsedition.com from Air America Radio.
That's the hour. I am Mark Maron. That is Mark Riley. The show is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We are talking to Bob Cusack, the managing editor for The Hill. Bob, one of our associate producers here, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman of New Jersey, just came in and informed me that in order to tell me a little bit about this, the Ethics Committee, and how even though that they voted down not to pass that, to take away that rule that would protect the way, that there is another thing in place that will protect him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Ethics Committee, the way it works is that if somebody files a complaint against another member, and there are five Republicans on the committee, five Democrats on the committee, if they are deadlocked, which in a lot of cases happens, automatically it triggers an investigative subcommittee. So basically, the investigation goes on. They changed the rule so that in deadlock cases, the complaint is dismissed.
Oh, so they're protected anyway. So this is no great thing. Whatever I was assuming before is I've just negated.
Well, I mean, it does protect both Republicans and Democrats as long as they can convince their guys to say, "Hey, protect me," because before it used to be that. And if it's a tie between, if it's five versus five, the investigation does happen. But if now it's five versus five, the investigation doesn't happen.
So it basically means no one gets investigated. And my concern is primarily with the guys I think are bad, which is Republicans.
Right. No one will get investigated. Everybody basically will be shielded. People can file complaints, but they probably won't go very far.
Well,
Bob, it sounds as though a lot of people on Capitol Hill think that DeLay will be indicted. Is that the sense you're getting?
There's a fear of that. I mean, DeLay has said that the prosecutor is partisan. The prosecutor says, "Hey, wait a minute, I go after Republicans and Democrats." But there is that fear that it's just a matter of time.
Well, I don't see any reason to be afraid.
Bob, when we look at the composition of the Congress, the fact that the presidency is in the hands of the same party that controls both houses of Congress, it would seem as though, to most Americans, that whatever Bush and the Congress can agree on, which ought to be a lot because they're both in the same party, that they should be able to slam most of this stuff through. What is the impediment if it's not the Democrats?
It is the Republicans because these guys have a lot of different views on what should happen, what should be Social Security reform, what legislation they should pass, how much they should curb spending. There have been a lot of fights within the Republican Party, even just in the last 2 months since the election, including the fight over whether Senator Specter would get the Judiciary Committee chairman. These guys feel like, they do have a mandate, but leading these guys is going to be very difficult, and a lot of conservatives especially have said that they voted certain ways because they were told that the president needs to be reelected, vote for this thing because the president needs it. Now they're saying, well, now we're going to go in our own way, and the president needs to listen to us.
So that's so you're saying to me that there, some of the president's stuff may not get through because of his own party.
Yes.
Well, that's great news.
Bob, forgive my ignorance on this, but did they get the tsunami aid done yesterday during that first day of the new Congress?
Yes, there's a lot of talk of upping it and increasing it. No one really wants to talk about actually how they're going to offset it or pay it. They just want to say, hey, we want to get this done as quickly as possible. So they've given some assistance, and they're probably going to give some more when they go into real full session in February.
So you mean there's been no talk about where the money's going to come from, but there's been a lot of talk about just, you know, making the number bigger.
That's right. That's
okay.
Right.
Incredible.
Yep.
Now, what about the nuclear option, you know, in the judicial nominations? There's been a lot of talk about, you know, Frist threatening to exercise this nuclear option. I kind of understand what it means. What I want to know is, again, you know, it seems that with this group of guys, you know, what's stopping this guy from doing this?
Nothing. I think Frist is going to do it. A nuclear option, all he wants to have votes. Basically, if you get 50 out of 100 votes, then the judge should be accepted and move on and not be blocked. Democrats want to reserve the right to filibuster and then therefore need 60 votes. Frist has said he doesn't want to do this, but he does want to do this, and he wants Reid to accept a straight up and down vote, but Senator Reid is not going to give that. So I don't see much room for compromise. I think it's going to be pretty nasty because Senator Reid's people have said that if Frist goes for the nuclear option, they're going to try to shut the Senate down and block everything that moves in the Senate. So it's going to be, I think, the relationship between Frist and Reid, while it's personable, I think on policy issues is going to be pretty nasty.
Well, thank God there's some resistance. I mean, how is it that the nuclear option is not deemed unconstitutional?
Well, it also could be legal. It could be a legal battle. I mean, if Frist goes for the nuclear option, you could see Democrats try to challenge that in court.
As a constitutional issue.
Exactly.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Bob, do the Democrats or do people on the Hill see the confirmation of Alberto Gonzalez as any kind of litmus test at all for the party's strength or perhaps the party's weakness?
I think this is one situation where Democrats are going to be tough and they're going to talk about the prison abuse scandal, but to some degree they are going to have to pick and choose their battles, and I think they're going to let Gonzalez through. But they're going to give him a hard time and ask him some tough questions. But, you know, Gonzalez being Hispanic and the political ramifications of blocking Hispanics to be attorney general are a little dicey right now for Democrats after their Election Day performance. So I think he's going to go through.
Yeah. It's important to have a Hispanic torture master. You know. All right. So anyways, let's talk about Congressman John Conyers and his drive for fair elections. What are the chances of him getting some support in the Senate?
Unlikely.
Really? Not one guy can just stand up to support this so we can get a debate going and maybe change the election system?
I think it's unlikely. I think he's working it, but I think that any move like that, Democratic leadership like Harry Reid is going to have to okay it, and I think that Democratic leaders are not going to go for that.
Now, you don't think that perhaps even Barack Obama might stand with Conyers?
I don't think so. I don't think he wants to. I mean, I don't think he wants to make that controversial a move in his first few days, and I don't think he wants to come out on that. But certainly, on the other hand, it would get him a lot of headlines.
Well, go ahead.
Well, no. I mean, if he did come out, how would they get even with him?
Well, there are a lot of ways. I mean, there are certain ways as far as pork spending and what you bring home and certain highways that you get built in your district, in your state. So there are a lot of ways that they can get back at him. But I think he would be more concerned probably with some of the criticism that he would take from Republicans and possibly some others. I think it would be a very controversial move. And these guys are very... When they've got bright political futures, I think they're very cautious at first.
All right. So what about one of the crusty old guys that's got nothing to lose? How about Kennedy or Byrd?
Why not Byrd?
There are a few of those in the Senate. Actually, a lot of them there are a lot of old Democrats, and there's a concern that some of them won't run for reelection. There have been no indications that any of these guys is going to go for that. And in 2000, none of them stepped up.
Yeah, it was embarrassing in 2000, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, if they're not going to step up in 2000, I really doubt that they're going to step up now.
Well, Bob Cusack, it was great talking to you. Thanks for being with us. Hope to talk to you again.
Thanks so much, Mark.
Take care, man.
That was Bob Cusack, the managing editor for The Hill. Isn't that unbelievable,
I'm
Riley?
Depressed now, man. I mean, it's a prediction. We don't know for a fact.
Kerry Kennedy, Bird. I understand, you know, Kerry has proven to be kind of a wuss in these matters. So, I mean, but why not Bird? I mean, why not Bird? Just to, you know, at least, you know, no one's saying that we're going to get, the election results changed, but at least to begin a debate to try and facilitate some consolidation of election processes across the country.
The processes were flawed. They were visibly flawed in the state of Ohio. It wasn't mythology that black people had to stand on long lines in order to vote. That's fact.
Yeah, the distribution of machines, you know.
The distribution of machines,
trails.
The whole nine yards. And we have the nerve to sit up and tell the Ukrainians, hey, wait a minute, there's something wrong. Your elections are flawed. And we're coming back here, and no one is prepared. I mean, I hope he's wrong about Barack Obama. I understand the Senate protocols. I understand how the Senate works. But I still just would hope against hope that the guy would stand and say, you know what, I'm standing with John Conyers.
Well, you don't think, I mean, you know, you don't think that if he's weighing this right now at what risk it would be to his political future? I mean, this guy's a golden boy.
He's a golden boy, and I understand he's a golden boy, but sometimes you just want somebody to stand up and say, hey, I'm not going that way, like Barbara Lee did.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Hopefully that'll happen. What do we got next hour? We've got, we're going to talk to Nichols.
John Nichols.
Our guy, more about, you know, how the president is going to deal with this particular Congress.
Yeah, he's got the great book title of 2005, Dick, the Man Who Was President.
I like talking to him because he says brother a lot. How you doing, brother? All right, we'll be back with that and more after this on Air America Radio.
I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, tops and bottoms of all shapes and sizes. Good morning to you. Guess who's back? Mark Riley.
Where?
Mark Riley, right there, back from his 29-week vacation in England, where Wayne Gilman insisted it was England, New Jersey.
English town, New Jersey is what Gilman insists, but we won't talk about him.
So now we know you went to the Fen Country?
Yes.
The Fen Country, where you were fascinated with the soil.
The land of black soil.
Yeah.
I mean, like, really, really black soil.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked like swampland almost, except it was dry. I mean, and it's apparently very nutrient-rich soil. They grow a lot of stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because when I was talking to you before the show, it was like the first thing out of your mouth. It's like, man, they got good dirt there.
Yeah,
the dirt
man.
Is very good.
Excellent dirt. The problem is that the Fen Country in England is kind of the equivalent of the either the Ozarks or the Appalachians. Well, yeah, the whole thing about inbred, and that's my cousin and all of that. If there's any place where that is that perception exists in England, it's in the Fen Country.
So that's the hillbilly area.
That's how they kind of sort of look at it. A lot of farms, loads of farms. But we spent a day in Cambridge.
What do they call hillbillies in England?
Hillbillies?
Come on.
I don't know. I have no idea.
No.
You know, I just hear people getting called sods all the time.
Oh, sods?
Yeah.
Those are the simple folk.
Yeah.
People of the land.
Those are the idiots that do stuff that, you know, like, you know, try and run you over in
those
the street
the,
or whatever.
Those are the dirt dolts. I don't know.
But I spent a really great day in Cambridge. Mm. You know, saw all the university and that whole thing. Beautiful, beautiful place to hang out.
It's one of the original universities, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the big old schools, that's like the place, Oxford and Cambridge.
Oxford and Cambridge, and I kept thinking like...
A lot of Navy Blazers.
Am I in Massachusetts?
Yeah.
You know, oh, well, because you get that feel, you know, the hallowed halls of academia.
Well, those are the original ones, I imagine. Those are the what they based Harvard and
yeah,
Yale on.
Yeah, yeah, actually, because Harvard's in Cambridge, Mass, so uh-huh. I got to figure. And then, you know, went to the Gap in Cambridge and saw a typical, you know...
Gap.
Well, a typical Gap, except they had this, you know, sell everything to the wall sale, and people were going in there like, It was the last merch on earth.
But the Gap is the same everywhere. You go to H&M, that's an English store. They got those here now. I mean, that's the weird thing about, you know, globalization and free market businesses. You can go just about anywhere and be comfortable knowing that it's just the same in some
respects. Subway, McDonald's, KFC, all over.
But, you know, when I was there, there was a myth, or maybe not a myth, that, the Kentucky Fried Chicken tasted a little fishy because they feed the chicken fish bits.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah? Well, it's got,
little fish and chips.
Well, we know that they were feeding the cow's cow. I mean, that was one of the assumptions as to the basis of mad cow disease. So I guess they recycle a lot of stuff that we don't know about.
Well, I kind of like go for
that was kind of a hiccup inverted burp.
Yeah, right.
Well, my cough button's way over there, so I figured, I'm not. I hold
we
back.
We have trouble reaching.
I hold back very little for my listening audience. I want to make sure they are part of everything that I do.
Yeah.
So wait, did you go? You went to some museums?
I went to the London Transport Museum, was a really. It's like all about their trains and buses and stuff because I love public transportation.
I know you do.
And when you're in a country where they drive on the other side of the road, you don't really want to get behind the wheel of a car.
It must be a little nerve-wracking. I imagine some people get hurt. I mean, I wonder how many Americans a year get injured either driving or stepping into traffic.
Well, there was a British couple, a British family, actually, that got into a very serious accident in Florida the day we got to England, and it was all over the newspapers. There was a black family from Florida who apparently tried to make a U-turn the wrong way on an expressway.
In England?
In Florida.
Oh.
And ran smack into, and the first thing everybody in England thought was, well, they were probably trying to drive a car without knowing, because, these were British people.
Oh, okay, I get it. They were British people.
Yeah, they were British people, and they just, I believe husband and wife were both killed. I think the two children were in very critical condition.
That's awful.
Yeah, but I mean, there is the whole idea of you got to, really make sure you look in the proper direction when you're getting ready to cross the street, because you could get hit.
Okay, so let's move on to a perkier topic. Now, you went to the Transport Museum.
Yes, and I also went to the London Museum. To the British Museum.
Oh, that's great. They have everything there.
They
have mummies and, right?
Isn't we went to the mummy, they have like a mummy IMAX presentation with 3D glasses and the whole nine.
Kids love mummies.
Yeah, my daughter loved the whole 3D, stuff coming out of the, out of the screen and jumping. She's, Daddy, how did they do that?
Yeah.
It was great stuff.
And what'd you tell her?
I said, it's a process. I don't know exactly how they do it, but I didn't want to say, well, honey, it's magic. But it was great because she still has a sense of wonder about these things.
And I'm glad you're there to explain stuff for her.
Well, yeah.
It's a process that maybe someone else could tell you about.
But I tell you what, she got a real kick out of driving. There's a virtual way you can drive a subway in the London Transport Museum.
They got like a subway simulator?
Yeah. And she actually read, Daddy, I'm driving the train. And she had a ball at that.
Oh, that's great.
She really, really enjoyed
it. When you were gone, when I was in California, I went to California Adventure.
Really?
That's across the street. That's like the grown-up Disneyland.
Oh, wow.
You just reminded me because I went on some dumb ride. Something aviator where you're supposed to feel like you're flying over California.
Really?
But it's basically a giant flight simulator where everybody gets into these like five to a row like chairlifts and you kind of dangle in this room in front of a... just like dangling with people you don't know in front of this giant screen. And it sort of moves like it's as if you're flying. And they pipe in smells. They kind of squirt in some orange air freshener when you're flying over orange groves and a little briny smell for the ocean. I waited online for an hour and a half for that.
And how long was the ride?
It's amazing. They're like 5 minutes long. Any ride at Disneyland, other than It's a Small World, which is eternal, which is nice. I love It's a Small World, is like 5 minutes long. I saw the Christmas parade at Disneyland.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
It was great.
My wife and daughter went. They have a New Year's parade in London that they went to. I didn't go. I was busy sleeping or something.
A New Year's parade?
Yeah.
Wow.
They actually had, this is the amazing thing about globalization, as you mentioned earlier. Mm. There were like the five first bands they had were all from America.
Oh, yeah, who was it? Did you see him? You weren't.
No, I didn't see it, but there was like one from Ohio, there was one from Oklahoma, all these different high school
marching bands. Yeah, that must have been their big deal. It's like, we're going to put enough money together to go to England and march in the New Year's
parade. Yeah.
So they get to go to England. Why do I feel like marching bands were probably invented over there somewhere?
They probably were, but the problem with
that's something you should know, Mr. Drum Corps.
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of different origins of modern marching music.
Okay, this is good. You just gave me an answer like you gave Vivek. Africa. It's a process. It's a historical
idea. But, you know, the problem with doing a New Year's parade in London is everybody's hungover, you know, from the night before.
So they're like holding their hands.
Oh,
the drums.
No.
Stop the drumming. Stop the drumming. No tubas.
Those are just people in their apartments. Never mind the people who are actually along the parade route. But, no, they had a ball. Kim and Vivica had a ball.
Good food?
Going.
Any good food, Jeep?
Chicken kebabs.
A lot of chicken kebabs.
Although they're getting harder and harder to find. And I got to say, I have a confession to make. Yeah. I actually, when I was in a hurry and went shopping, went to a McDonald's.
Dude, went to a McDonald's.
But had a fish.
Did you? Oh, you just had a fish?
Had a fish sandwich. Yeah.
Wow. That, you know, sometimes, like, rarely, but I'll have to eat a McDonald's cheeseburger.
Yeah,
I don't even know why.
It's a disgusting thing.
I have no idea what it is, but it's never like a Big Mac. It's always like a it's always like a cheeseburger.
Wasn't that yesterday?
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, I haven't done it in a while. Right now, if I don't stop with the Ben and Jerry's, I get on a slippery slope with this stuff.
They put stuff in the food, man, I think addicts you to it. That's what I think
it's called
is.
Sugar.
No, it's not. Well, maybe
you mean at McDonald's? But, dude, last night I got the pint of Caramel Sutra ice cream by Ben & Jerry's. Dude, the stuff where they put the core of stuff in the middle, it's on one side it's ice cream with chocolate chips in it, like fudge ice cream. On the other side it's vanilla ice cream. And right through the middle, just caramel. They're just a glob of caramel. This isn't even designed to make it out of the container, Kalo. This is for hardcore people that are just going to sit there and divvy up that caramel with equal scoops. Like, you can't. How can you even scoop that stuff up? It doesn't come out of the container in any practical way because it's not streaked. It's not infused into the flavor. It's just a wad of caramel in the middle. So all you can do is sit there and eat the whole thing in one sitting and feel fat the next day and pick it yourself. All right, maybe I'm getting a little specific now. I gotta go. We gotta go. We're gonna come back. We're gonna talk more about restricting victims' rights, or as they call it, tort reform.
Disgusting.
15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
I'm the Reverend Al Sharpton, reminding you that listening to any radio show besides Morning's Edition is officially considered selling out to the man. So keep it tuned here to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Ramon came by with his twin brother today and delivered the Palm Pilot here today, a unique Palm Pilot. This is George Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton, who are now touring the country asking for money, posing as George Jr.'s heart. This is the dual Palm Pilot for today. 6 a.m. Wake up, Bush. Oatmeal, prayer, exercise. Clinton, oatmeal, read 8 newspapers, special full-body Asian massage from Pang Lee. 8 a.m., appear together on the Today Show. Bush, note, have Clinton stay on message. Sit between him and Katie Couric. Clinton, note, make eye contact with Kerry. Katie, make eye contact with Katie. Smile and say, tsunami. 10 a.m., press conference. Bush, tell Clinton to stop grinning all the time. He's not selling his damn book now. Clinton, tell Bush to smile once in a while. The guy looks like the Crypt Keeper. 12 noon, working lunch to discuss fundraising campaign. Bush, tell Clinton this will be a lot like a military campaign. Oh, wait, he wouldn't know anything about that. Clinton, tell Bush this will be a lot like a president's second term. Oh, wait, he wouldn't know anything about that. 4 p.m., appear on Wolf Blitzer. Bush, ask that horny show-off hillbilly what the Thai word for impeached is. Clinton, tell Wolf that until today I thought his son was the stupid one. 6 p.m., interview at Fox. Note, separate limos. 8 p.m., NPR interviewed. Canceled. 9 p.m., David Letterman appearance. Canceled. 10 p.m., have lawyers draw up restraining orders. Let's get back into this tort reform issue, or that's what they call it, tort reform. We like to call it restricting victims' rights. Bush is going to a county, Madison County, and that's in Illinois.
Yep.
It's the lobbyists have titled it a judicial hellhole. The newspapers have picked up on that. The media has been calling it a judicial hellhole because at one time there was a lot of lawsuits, asbestos-related lawsuits. Those lawsuits have been tapering off, but it wasn't an unreasonable amount of lawsuits. Many were settled you know, out of court. But the truth of the matter is, victims whose rights would have been restricted by Bush's proposal, and these come two of these stories from Madison County, Illinois.
And these are this is probably you know, just two examples of what, you know, what can happen to people. But folks don't always understand that there are situations where someone's negligence costs an individual his or her life.
Barbara Willis underwent back surgery 5 years ago. During surgery, Barbara showed problems, but the surgeon continued operating for another 8 to 9 hours despite her poor signs. After the surgery, which took 6 to 8 hours longer than 6 to 8 hours longer than expected, the hospital kept pumping fluids into her, and because no doctor checked on her from 9 p.m. until after 5:30 the next morning, no one realized that she wasn't expelling any of the fluids. Her body weight shot up 30 pounds from the day before, with Barbara visibly swollen and so distressed that they restrained her. The nurse reportedly paged the surgeon all night, but he did not respond. The hospital and several doctors later agreed to pay an undisclosed amount, above $250,000, which would have been the maximum the defendants would have had to pay under Bush's proposed restrictions. And Barbara never would have gotten any money anyway, because she died the day after the operation, having drowned in her own fluids. That was in Madison County, Illinois.
So that's frivolous.
Yeah, right.
That's like something that's over the top.
Yeah, just crazy that her daughter would sue because her mother died because of hospital oversight and medical negligence.
Now, here's another example. In 1981, an 18-year-old woman named Denise Williams went to St. Joseph's Hospital because she suffered a miscarriage, which left fetal tissue remaining in her body. She went in for what's called a DNC, a dilation and curettage, in which a doctor scrapes the surface of the uterus to remove the fetal tissue. Her doctor pierced her uterine wall and, with his forceps, pulled out 19 feet of her small intestine. When he realized what he did, he left the operating room and the hospital, leaving another surgeon to try and patch her back up. She sued and received $4 million. Today, she cannot digest food. Every night, she has to hook herself up to a machine to pump liquid food into her system. The lifetime cost of her care is expected to be about $3 million. Now, she got $4 million. Her care is going to cost $3 million. But this is the frivolous, and again, Madison County, Illinois, this is the, quote, judicial hellhole.
Well, what the hell is wrong with that doctor? Why don't they have some, you know, put some effort into medical oversight? For God's sakes, get these bad doctors out of the employment of hospitals. I mean, you know, it's just such a misnomer that, you know, that medical, you know, that doctors are driving up healthcare costs. This doctor is a bad doctor. What kind of guy pulls out half of someone's intestines and says, ooh, wow, I gotta go.
I gotta go.
I mean, what is that? I mean, it's disturbing. How come they don't put a little money into medical oversight and get rid of these, you know, these bad doctors? Look, I grew up with a doctor, and granted, you know, my father had to pay a lot in malpractice insurance. They all do. But, you know, surveys show that the board says insurance companies driving up the prices, not the cost of lawsuits. Insurance companies make those decisions based on the insurance company's investments, based on the viability of the insurance company's stock or what have you. But it's up to them. This is an administration that protects insurance companies, protects corporations, protects pharmaceutical industries and corporations over and above protecting victims from getting justice from or from being able to have any impact on the corporations that created fatal harm in their lives.
Now, I hope you were paying attention, listening audience, where Mark Maron talked about insurance companies' investments, because that's what they do with this money. They put this money into the markets, into the financial markets, so that if they lose money in the financial markets, premiums go up. It's not just a question of frivolous lawsuits. It's not just a question of it costing the insurance company so much more money because people are filing suits and receiving huge awards. Not, by the way, from some person on high, but from real juries, people, just like the people who have been harmed here.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that there are a lot of circumstances, and I'm glad you mentioned the investments, because that's part of it.
Yeah.
That, you know, play into how fast premiums rise and, you know, what they rise to.
Yeah, and there's one more story here that I want to share, which has to do with really, you know, poor doctoring. And we'll talk about that, but I want you to, you know, enjoy your breakfast for a few minutes, because this one's kind of heavy.
Yeah, it is.
If that'll bring you back. 28 past the hour.
And we got John Nichols coming up momentarily here on Air America Radio.
on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
This is Air America Radio. Oppose Alberto Gonzalez. Contact your senator and or contribute to purchase a full-page ad in the New York Times. Go to the links page on morningsedition.com for more info. Support Congressman John Conyers' drive for fair elections to get a senator to stand up and make this happen to bring the debate to the House. Go to the links page on morningsedition.com for info. Help the victims of the tsunami in Asia. Go to the links page on morningsedition.com to see what you can do. Also, if you'd like to blog or email, it's sedition@airamericaradio.com. And the blog is at morningsedition.com. Come on down. Say hi to the peoples.
Yeah.
Right now, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now on the phone, once again, is Planet Push correspondent Lawton Smalls. And this morning, Lawton is on assignment covering President Bush's trip to Madison County, Illinois. How's it going there, Lawton?
Not bad, Mark, but President George W. two-term mandate speaks with the Lord Bush is promoting tort reform.
Uh-huh.
Coming to Madison County because, well, frankly, Mark, this is the frivolous lawsuit capital of the world.
Mm-hmm.
This is a judicial hellhole.
I've heard that.
Bridges in this Madison County lead straight to the infernal region.
Uh-huh.
Demons stalking the streets, twisted shapes, foul and unnatural. It's an image out of Hieronymus Bosch.
Lawton, tort reform.
Hellhole.
No, Lawton.
Awful.
Tort reform.
Unbelievable.
It's just another phrase for restricting victims' rights.
Oh, no. Now, Mark.
What?
Tort reform is about helping unprotected victims.
What are you talking about?
Like the tobacco companies and the manufacturers of asbestos. Now, when I think of how many vertically integrated multinational conglomerates that have been abused and exploited by these greedy little men, well, it breaks my heart.
You know what?
Hellhole!
I think that you're misreading this, Lawton. All right, if those corporations feel that they can get away with manufacturing a hazardous product because they don't have to worry about making big payouts, then they'll be more likely to put thousands of people at risk of being injured, poisoned, worse, who knows what.
Mark, we have to think of the children.
Oh, what are you talking about?
If folks keep filing frivolous lawsuits, tobacco companies will be put out of business.
Okay.
And then, when our children become 10 or 11 and old enough to smoke, where are they going to get their cigarettes, Asia? Canada? While I have breath in my lungs,
now,
Mark Maron.
This is crazy, Lawton. It's crazy. Bush is always talking about how average Americans are smart and know better than the government. Doesn't a jury consist of 12 Americans? And if they can't be trusted to decide liability cases, why are they capable of deciding capital punishment cases?
All right, here's the difference.
What?
The difference is that when a man gets sent to death row, there's no huge cash settlement involved.
What does that have to do with it?
Unlike class action suits, murder is a victimless crime.
You're crazy.
I'm sure the president will be making these points with his usual eloquence later today here in this hellhole.
There's something wrong with you, Lawton. Hey, look, are you going to go to the hall to hear Bush's speech or what?
Well, unfortunately, no. I'll be listening to it on the radio because, crowded rooms affect my respiratory ailments.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. I had no idea you had medical problems.
Well, Mark, I don't like to dwell on it. I don't ask everyone to feel my pain, but I got asbestos poisoning at an office building I worked at a few years ago. It was a think tank. I don't want to get into it.
I hope you're feeling okay. I'm really sorry to hear that. I had no idea that you.
I was never able to play sports again.
Oh, man.
I was the best white halfback in the South.
Yeah.
And they robbed me of my youth.
Yeah.
I will sue those bastards. I'll take every nickel they have. Get John Edwards on the phone.
Hey, Lawton.
Get him on the phone.
Lawton.
Hey,
Lawton, I'm sorry that you have this problem. But, I mean, I think you're all right.
I left my medication in the hotel.
Right.
I feel a seizure coming up.
Okay. Oh, all right. I'm sorry, but
bad air.
Okay.
Bad
all right.
Air.
Good luck, man. I wish I could help you.
Bad
inhaler. Lawton Small. Lawton Small is on assignment in Illinois.
God loves you.
Okay. Thanks, Lyden. Thanks, Lyden. I hope he's all right.
Wow,
that was disturbing. Yet still supporting the president.
Took my breath away.
Yeah, when you hear a cough like that. So let's give one more example. Big business lobbyists. This is from Madison County's, as they say in the paper, the same people that refer to the judicial hellhole, the lobbyist term, they say that these jury verdicts and these frivolous lawsuits have metastasized into a neighboring St. Clair County. In St. Clair County, 52-year-old Don Sancher had suffered pain and rectal bleeding for more than 10 years, but his doctor always said it was hemorrhoids and never sent him for a colonoscopy. You know, it's sad that I'm reading this, and there's part of you, I know, out there, they're saying, where is the punchline, just because of the nature of it, but there isn't one. It's horrendous. When the pain was so bad that Don went to an emergency room, they told him to get a colonoscopy. It showed that Don was suffering from stage 3 colorectal cancer. A surgeon told him his cancer had been growing for more than 7 years, but could have been found during that time with a simple colonoscopy. A trial last year, Don's doctor essentially admitted his wrongdoing. He then agreed to settle the case for an undisclosed amount. The cancer, now at stage 4, has spread to Don's liver and, despite additional surgeries to remove lesions, continues to recur and spread.
Wow.
Now, this is something, not only could it have been stopped, you know, but if there are caps on these lawsuits, and there are certainly loopholes for these guys to get out of this, for doctors who have no conscience, then, you know, they would.
How much do you think it's going to cost to treat this man for whatever is the rest of his life versus a cap of $250,000, which would be the most he could get for pain and suffering? How in the world would he make ends meet in terms of his medical bill?
And this is the other thing that this sort of illustrates as well, is that, you know, if this doctor had been part of an HMO and had made a decision, a lot of these doctors, because of, again, the HMO, which I link directly to the insurance companies, restrict them from doing certain treatments that are too expensive if they think it's something else. So, you know, it's a weird area some of these doctors live in. I mean, this guy obviously owned up to his oversight, you know, and paid out.
Critical oversight.
Yeah, I'll say. But, you know, this is the type of stuff that, you know, if they are, you know, if they put caps on these lawsuits, you know, this justice may never be able to be vetted out. Is that the, yeah, okay.
Yep.
Let's talk to our guest. You know, right now we have a regular guest on the show. He's the Washington editor of The Nation. He joins us by phone. He's in Madison, Wisconsin. He's the author of Dick, The Man Who Is President. Good morning, John Nichols. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Mark and Mark. I'm delighted to be a part of a discussion about colon.
Yeah, you know, we had
to... apropos of Bush, actually.
Yeah,
wow.
Absolutely. I wish we could remove that lesion from the nation's colon.
Festering sore.
So are you out there with him?
I've been back and forth. I'll be there tomorrow again.
Uh-huh.
There at the start of the week. And so it's like your previous guest was talking about, you know, there are these hell holes. You can kind of, if you hold your breath tight, go in for a little bit of time,
uh-huh.
But then you got to pull out.
Uh-huh. But is it really a hell hole, or is that a lobbyist term to help George Bush pitch?
Of course. Look, the fact is, I was talking about Washington. Sorry, a little error there. Look, Washington's not as much of a hell hole as people think.
Uh-huh.
Election results were pretty bad. You'd think the wrong guy, is probably going to get sworn in on January 20th.
You think that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure of it now.
Do you think that anybody's going to any senators are going to stand up to help Conyers out, or what?
Well, let me say this right up front. I've
got
a piece that I just finished writing, in fact, sent in for today to be online, and then also in the magazine,
mm-hmm.
saying that, you know, I've read all the Conyers stuff. There is simply no question that a Democrat should stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And let me, and I know we try not to be at all serious here, but this is a
no. This is all serious.
Yeah.
I know, mind you. But I emphasize that because this is a really big deal. There are two camps as regards what happened in Ohio. One camp says, "Oh yeah, you know, the election was stolen. Kerry won. You know, it's all either hidden or, you know, fraudulent or whatever."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that camp's wrong, but that's not what Conyers is saying.
Yeah.
Conyers is saying that there were legitimate, clearly quantifiable disenfranchisements of many, many voters, violations of state and federal law. And that is an absolutely appropriate standard for refusing to accept the electoral votes of Ohio.
So what you're
and
sort
all
of...
doing is asking a senator to rise to that very minimal standard of oversight.
Right, just to get the debate into the House so we can, you know, get some action taken.
And you're not going to get action taken. Let me emphasize that, too. All this does if you get a formal objection approved, all it does is then shift the debate over to the House and Senate for 2 hours. You'll have a two-hour debate in the House, a two-hour debate in the Senate, and Tom DeLay and Bill Frist will shut things down. So it's not going to change anything. But what you will do is simply have the formal objection taken. It will go into the historic record. It will also perhaps cause our media, our mainstream media in this country, which has neglected this issue, to focus its
attention. So that's what that means. Riley and I were trying to figure that out. When a senator comes forward, that means the objection is taken and it is put into the national record.
Well, it's more than that. Then it forces a two-hour debate in the House and Senate. This is the equivalent, a rough equivalent, of impeachment.
Okay, we're going to come back with you, John, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but we also want to talk about, you know, what's going to happen with Bush and this Congress. After this break, we're talking to the nation's John Nichols. It's 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. It's more than just a commute companion.
Listen online at morningsedition.com when you get to work, courtesy of
Air America Radio.
We're back. It's 50 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
The show is Morning Sedition. The network is Air America Radio. The guest is the nation's John Nichols. John, so I'm assessing from what you said before that you're of the school of thought that if everybody was entitled to vote properly in Ohio, Kerry probably would have won.
Yeah, I think it's a reasonable assessment. I don't think it's a guaranteed assessment. Now, I make the distinction between Ohio and Florida in 2000. In Florida in 2000, there was simply no question. If everybody wanted to vote, was allowed to vote, if every vote was counted accurately, Gore won. That was beyond doubt. In Ohio, it's a murkier situation. But in a weird way, that makes the objection to the certification of the Ohio results even more appropriate. And I'll tell you why. There are so many unresolved questions about how various counties in Ohio conducted the vote, about real dubious developments, things that happened that shouldn't have, and about Ken Blackwell, the Secretary of State's oversight of the election, that it's entirely appropriate for the U.S. Congress to take what in all likelihood would be 2 hours to publicly discuss some of the problems. At the very most, it would provoke, I hope, a little bit of a national debate about our completely flawed electoral system. That's probably about all we could expect from it. And yet, amazingly enough, it seems that most Democrats in the Senate are afraid to even go that far. And I think it's a lack of courage. It's a political butt covering. And frankly, I think we should all be very glad, A, that Conyers has done what he's done, and B, that he's drawn the support of some pretty respectable folks, not just Jesse Jackson and Michael Moore, but a lot of legal scholars, people like John Bonifaz, who's with the National Voting Rights Institute. The fact of the matter is this is legitimate, and the fact that it's being dismissed so casually, even by a lot of progressive Democrats, is sort of, you know, nut stuff, you know, sore loser stuff, is troubling. It said some sad stuff about the likelihood that we're going to ever get voting reform in this country. And it also said something sad about all those proclamations that Democrats made about how they're going to count every vote this time.
Are you in a meeting with Democrats now? What do I hear in the background?
I'm in a meeting with my one-year-old daughter.
Ah, there you go.
And you know what she says in situations like this?
What?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. John, you've laid it out really well, and it would seem to me that there should be one person in the United States Senate that would stand up and stand with John Conyers. I remember feeling very aggrieved and very pained back in 2000 when member of the Congressional Black Caucus after member got up in front of the Senate, was challenged, and, of course, no one stood. Half of them looked like it was a joke. Do you think, and I asked this of a previous guest this morning, do you think there's any possibility that the new Senator Barack Obama from Illinois will stand with John Conyers?
Well, Obama's the sort of unwritten story of the Senate so far. We don't know. But I wouldn't assume that he will stand simply because he's an African-American man.
No, but maybe he sees the facts the same way Conyers does. I mean,
exactly.
You know, African-Americans, you know, let's be real about it. We have a history with voting in this country that's not the same as the rest of the country.
Exactly. And remember, most African-Americans have a mother or a father or perhaps even themselves who was someone who was denied the right to vote.
Exactly.
So it's a much more serious matter. I think Obama is an outside possibility, but I have to be honest, he is, I've talked to him, and he is a guy who's completely in the limelight. And to start that way, let's put it this way, he's going to have a lot of advisors telling him not to start his Senate career that way.
Mm-hmm.
I wish he would.
Well,
but I think there's some other senators you've got to keep an eye on. Russ Feingold from Wisconsin, who's one true maverick in the Democratic caucus. You never know what he'll do. I don't expect him to, but he's an outside chance. And I also think, you know, the oldest member of the Senate, remember that Conyers is the senior Democrat in the House, the senior Democrat in the Senate, Robert Byrd, who has no love of George Bush and a great love of the Constitution, you know, you might yet have a shot at him. But I have to be honest with you. I think it is absolutely appropriate to stir this issue up, to demand that senators do act and that. But when all is said and done, I'm afraid that we might well see a repeat of what you saw in Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11.
Well, John Nichols, if people want to get involved, you can go to morningsedition.com to you know, either get information on how to write your senator or you know, get involved with this with Congressman Conyers. Now, if they're not going to stand up for this, John, you know, why should we assume they're going to do anything?
Well, that's what scares me. I mean, look, an opposition party has a profound challenge always. You know you're not going to get your agenda implemented. The question is, how do you strike that balance between compromises, which may help people, and outright opposition, which stops, hopefully, really bad things from happening? I think at this point the Democrats haven't figured their act out. And I do think in the end they'll win the Social Security fight, because Social Security is something that has such broad popular support.
Who will win?
The Democrats.
Oh, good.
The forces of light, let me say that.
Yes.
You know, but I think on a lot of other issues, the judicial fights in that, and also the selections of cabinet members, I'm worried that the Democrats will make the same mistake in 2005 that they did in 2001 and 2003, coming into a new Congress and assuming for some bizarre reason that they can work with the Bush administration.
Well, how about fragmenting on the other side? How about fragmenting on the right within the party, people to the right and to the center, you know, arguing, and also what kind of trouble is Bush going to have rallying his own party?
That's the really hopeful development that we've seen so far. I mean, there's simply no question that Republicans like being in charge now. They've gotten more and more comfortable with being the party of government. Weirdly enough, that means that they are more likely to respond to the popular will. You saw that yesterday when the House, or 2 days ago, when the House rejected Tom DeLay's Self-Protection Act. And so I think there's some indication that these Republicans are increasingly willing to bend to the popular will. I think you'll see that on Social Security. The other place where I think you'll see a lot of Republicans break with Bush is on the issue of trade. The Central American Free Trade Act, which doesn't get talked about much in the media, but which is a huge deal for the Bush administration.
I think your daughter has something to say about this. Just put her on for a minute.
She says, But the bottom line on that Central America Free Trade Act is a horrible piece of legislation. And if enough Republicans break on it, Bush will lose his major economic initiative of 2005.
Well, that'd be great. We got to go, John. You said some, you know, actually, you know, mildly helpful
real
things.
Real profound stuff, man.
Appreciate you being here.
I like being profound. I love being out with the two marks.
All
okay,
right, man.
Cool. John Nichols from The Nation. I think we cut him off on the bros. You know, you get by bros.
You didn't say bros.
All right, so there's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are marching orders for today. One, while Jeb is in Asia, ransack his office for missing Gore votes. Two, praise USC for beating Oklahoma in last night's national championship game. That'll teach them to vote for Bush. Three, watch debut of Alias for, one, the latest advances in counterterrorism tactics, and two, fashion tips for spring. Four, since we've got Bush Sr. and Clinton working on tsunami relief, why not add Ross Perot? Come on, throw him in there. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. $350 million for tsunami aid, please. That would even pay for one time traveling robot soldier of the future. Who's going to protect you from the alien invasion in 2011, huh? Wake up, sheeple. There's things going on.
That's right.
Oh, man, good to have you back, Riley.
Hey, it's good to be back tomorrow. You want to know why things are so bad, the toxic fumes?
Yes.
We'll find out tomorrow. We talked to a guy who resigned from the EPA. Have a great day. Air America Radio.